Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You're listening to the best of Montana Talks.
AI and the future of electricity demand. Well, not even just the future, the right now of electricity demand. But yeah, last night I got to sit through an incredible presentation and an incredible panel discussion as well. And it triggered this tweet. I posted this on X last night. Electricity. Enviros started demanding electric everything. Remember, they want, you know, California. Yeah, you got to have an electric lawnmower, not just electric cars. And then they wanted to shut off the electricity whenever they didn't have enough, right? They wanted electric lawnmowers. You had to have electric everything. They wanted you to get rid of your gas stoves. Got to be electric. And I like cooking eggs on a gas stove. It's just there's something better about cooking eggs with a gas stove instead of an electric stove. Do you guys feel me on that one? But yeah, when it comes to electricity, environmentalists started demanding electric everything. They created this monster, and now it is hungry, real hungry. And I tweeted that out as I was listening to Paige Lambermont. She is a research fellow and an energy policy expert with CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And yeah, she's on the ground here in Montana, along with Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute, with the Montana-based think tank doing some great work. Kendall, Montana First, we'll start with you. Great event last night. Thanks for letting me take part.
Yeah, well, thanks for showing up, and thanks for having me in studio.
You gave a great legislative update, and I definitely want to touch on that as well, everything from property taxes to housing costs and more. But big picture, I really felt that this CEI panel discussion that you had talking about energy, electricity, AI, data centers, that's a key part of addressing the whole property tax question, if you ask me.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the future we're talking about. I mean, this is what Montana's economy is going to be all about in 25 years. It's going to be demand for data. It's going to be these data-intensive businesses. We're going to need to talk about data centers and how to power them with hopefully with Montana-made energy.
Well, that's the thing is you can build these data centers anywhere right now. And like I was talking with one friend who was at the event last night, and he's like, yeah, well, they've got data centers in Austin, Texas, but why would you build a data center in Austin, Texas? Property costs too much. You've got too many people there. You can build these things anywhere. Why not build it closer to the power source? It could be the natural gas coming out of our oil well sites in eastern Montana. It could be the natural gas deposits themselves. It could be coal. It could be small-scale nuclear. Any of the above, right?
That's exactly right. We actually have the best climate for data centers, too. I mean, you have all these computers operating, and they put off a lot of heat. So you need a cool climate. So Texas doesn't really make the most sense. Montana's the perfect place to build data centers, and it has a lot of benefits for Montana's economy, not just in, you know, the tech space, but, I mean, data centers, you know, what goes into data centers is computer chips. And computer chips need rare earth minerals that we have here in Montana. So we can mine the minerals, we can produce and refine it all here. We also have semiconductor manufacturing going on in places like Kalispell. We have photonics that goes into that, based in Bozeman. All of our industries upstream of data centers can benefit by this growing demand. And then the energy production, they need massive amounts of energy to operate, to crunch all the numbers and the algorithms that go into data and computing.
We'll be back with the best of Montana Talks after these messages.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. Lots of sun, a few clouds today, high of 77. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, low near 52. Chance of showers and storms Tuesday in the afternoon, high near 76. Slight chance of showers and storms early Tuesday night. Will cool to low near 53. Slight chance of showers and storms on Wednesday. That's a look at Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
Securing America.
Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer announced the winners of the state's first ever Law Enforcement Team of the Year Award Thursday, recognizing sheriff's deputies and dispatchers from Palm Beach and Martin counties who worked together to capture suspect Ryan Ruth after his failed assassination attempt of President Trump last September.
It started with an off-duty Palm Beach sheriff's officer getting a tip about what was going on, immediately reacting, notifying other officers in the area.
Huffmeyer saying of the effort and ensuing chase, which led to Ruth's capture.
It could have been a much worse day.
And not allowing the recipients of the award to dismiss their accomplishments.
You say, oh, I was just doing my job, sir. I was just following my training. I was just following protocols. Well, today we're not going to let you get away with that. We're going to give you an award. You deserve it.
Kim Uretsky, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All this talk about power, before I get to Lee and Kalispell's phone call, let me tell you about power. Power Plus Pain Aid. I got to meet a Big Fork Montana Marine Corps veteran back in Washington, D.C. during Trump's inauguration, and he's a fellow veteran. He said, Aaron, I got to send you some of my product here. It's an energy drink with pain-relieving vitamins in it, and it doesn't have all those chemicals that some of those other little energy drinks have. And so I'm a big fan of this product, big fan of stuff that's made in America, big fan of products developed by our fellow veterans that live right here in Montana. Here's the deal. If you want to try this product out, you can get 15% off your order right now. Go to drinkpowerplus.com, and you'll get 15% off when you use the code FLINT15, FLINT15, at checkout. So, yeah, you know, we always talk about, well, you know, no pain, no gain. Well, you can get more gain, less pain with Power Plus Pain Aid. Go to drinkpowerplus.com. Lee in Kalispell, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for the call.
Yeah, so this deals with natural force and the power that's going through there. How about trying to mitigate the chance of fires by reducing the amount of trees you have around the power lines and power poles, say about 10,000 feet back on both sides? I'm not saying cut them all down. I'm just saying
expand the buffer zone. Yeah, no, great point. Because, Paige, isn't that exactly what California blocked the power companies from doing?
I mean, an important part of building out new power infrastructure or even maintaining what you already have is good forest management. And in California especially, they have really struggled to allow good forest management. A lot of environmental regulations have actually prevented, including things like NEPA, have prevented doing forest management the time that it's needed. And so then, instead of cutting back some trees, they all burn down. which, of course, it protects the trees, right? By not allowing you to cut a few down, you're going to end up burning the whole forest.
And regulations are also a big barrier, too, like those transmission line upgrades, too. So you'd want to talk about if we want to bury the cable instead of having the wires going through, it would be a little bit safer, you know, less likely to start a fire. That requires some environmental analysis. And then you're opening yourself up to a lawsuit about endangering an owl or you name it, you know. and we've got to fix that problem.
California, they're trying to bury the power lines there? Because it would be cool if you could build all this power, but bury the power lines, much like we bury the internet, fiber, right? They're trying to do it in this California town. They say that under the current regulations and the current everything, bureaucratic, whatever, it would take 500 years to bury the power lines for one town, let alone a state the size of Montana that's like driving from Chicago to D.C.
500 years for a project that should take less than five?
Exactly. Yeah.
That is obscene. I think so much of the push now for the increasing power demand, I think, is really revealing the insanity of a lot of our power policies, right? Because when power demand over the last 20 years was fluctuating by between 2% a year, 1% a year, sometimes it was going down 1 or 2% a year, it wasn't doing anything. And so you could get away with doing a lot of kind of silly things that don't help anything. Now that we need more power, you can't get away with that anymore.
And now Google is going nuclear, Intel is going nuclear. It goes back to that, you know, they created the monster, and now that monster is really hungry. They don't care where they get their power from, and these are the same people who were lecturing us about electricity and all this nonsense just 2-3 years ago.
That is actually making me sort of hopeful. I think a lot of people, especially like in the tech industry, places like that, whatever policy for energy allows them to get what they need while still upholding the values that they think they hold works. But if you create a system for them where they can get the power that they need and not feel guilty about it, that's the best. It's, you need this power, and you're not going to get it from just wind and solar alone. That's not going to happen. So what can we do to make it so that you get this power efficiently and the whole system works?
EV thing blew up in their face.
It's revealed to a lot of people, I think, the problems with their energy policy ideas and their, you know, corporate commitments to things. They're realizing that, you know, we maybe can't be net zero by whatever year internally within this company. Instead, we're going to prioritize keeping the lights on.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a good shift.
Yeah. John of the Flathead. John, did you have a quick question or comment? We're just about out of time.
Well, the quick question is, has anybody looked at the actual surge process when, let's say, the grid goes down, and then it comes back up online, and then that surge going through any new development or data centers, or how that actually works, because that's a big...
Yeah, basically, this is grid reliability, which is already questionable, right?
So I think that he's talking about, like, a black start. So essentially, once the power grid goes down, if all of the power plants that were online have shut down, in order to get the grid back online and back to the 50 hertz frequency that it needs to function at, you have to do, like, a black start. It takes forever. It's hard. It's hard on all the equipment, and you're out without power for a while in the process. So making sure that we don't let the power fully go out, like a full blackout across the grid, not just like a regional blackout or brownout, but like an actual power outage.
EMP type of craziness.
Hard on equipment and keeps power off for a while.
Kendall Cotton, I know you've got a ton of great information and resources on your Frontier Institute website. Great to have both of you here. What else do you want to tell folks with about 20 seconds to go?
15. Hey, I would just say if you want to keep up with our work, go sign up for our weekly newsletter, Frontier Weekly. It's on our website, frontierinstitute.org.
All right, great to see both of you. Thanks for joining us here in studio. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll be back with the Best of Montana Talks right after these messages.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
It's useful to remember that economic systems generally, and market capitalism in particular, operate in a larger social universe. All aspects of capitalism, corporations, profits, and people getting rich, operate within what former BBR executive in residence Bill Witzit called the social license to operate. It's a powerful idea that businesses are wise to pay heed to. If the actions of profit-seeking businesses stray too far from what is socially acceptable, the implicit support that allows business the freedom to operate as they see fit may be challenged. Two developments bring this to mind. The first is the implementation by landlords of new tools to allow them to better match and usually raise residential rents to market conditions. Another is the increasing tendency of some drug makers to more fully exploit their market power to raise prices for necessities like insulin. The market gives them that freedom, but angry customers may not. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. It's hard to arrest a member of Congress, especially if the arrest is even remotely connected to their work in office. Now, if a member were to hit their spouse, that's assault. That's different. The same if a member is arrested for DUI driving home after a birthday party. But if a lawmaker is engaged in anything related to legislation, getting to or from their office to vote, or doing congressional oversight in the field, that's another matter. Article 1, Section 6 of the Constitution generally shields lawmakers from charges. That's the speech or debate clause. And it reads like this, quote, "They shall in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of the peace be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective houses, and in going to and returning from the same, and for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place." The founders were mindful of potential consequences for lawmakers if they were subject to a political arrest, or if someone wanted to sideline them to keep them from voting a certain way. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Hi, everybody. It's time for your Memorial Day Ag Report. I'm Russell Nimitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. Well, the summer grilling season is officially here, and the Cattlemen's Beef Board Chairman, Ryan Morehouse from Texas, says that beef checkoff dollars are hard at work, making sure that beef is on the minds of consumers when they head to the meat case.
Well, you know, it's the time of year everybody gets their grills out, and beef being a big grilling option for people, it's dust off the winter and go into the spring, and the warm temperatures get everybody fired up for grilling, and we just hope they choose beef to grill. It's beef's a little high right now price wise, but for the most part, from everything we've seen from demand and retail advertising, looks like beef's going to be a top pick for grilling.
He says through the years, the checkoff-funded beef, it's what's for dinner message has really resonated well with consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the great things that the checkoff dollars go is the beef is what's for dinner plan that program that NCBA pushes. And it's, really it's all about promoting beef demand and promoting beef being center of the plate. Memorial Day is actually second right behind 4th of July for the biggest grilling time of the year. So it's definitely a target for advertising and target for using checkoff dollars to really point people to using beef.
And he says checkoff dollars are hard at work this year, reminding consumers of other delicious beef options at the meat case to help encourage them to still buy beef despite the higher prices.
This year it's been, a little bit of a challenge with the high prices that beef, just where we are in the beef cycle, supplies are low and obviously prices are high, but demand's still good and it looks great. And so maybe this year, kind of from what I'm seeing, and maybe you too, pushing some products that maybe instead of a ribeye or a New York strip steak, maybe push some hamburger products or push some other products, cheaper cuts, maybe some skirt steak or some flank steak to grill instead of the middle meats.
Now, for more information about the Beef Checkoff Program and what your beef checkoff dollars are helping to fund, plus see delicious beef recipes, visit beefitswhatsfordinner.com. Stay with us. We'll have more Ag News right after this.
The Northern Pulse Growers Association and Northern Crops Institute invite you to join the Pulse Potential Webinar Series. The webinars focus on providing education on pulse production and use with the goal of increasing consumer demand and expanding pulse production through new growers. Topics include the use and benefits of pulse crops, trends and innovations, market drivers, and the path from producer to processor. Check out the schedule and register for the next webinar at northern-crops.com/webinars.
With AgWest Farm Credit, the health of your business drives the future of ours. We're an agricultural lending cooperative powered by you, our customer members, and we're focused on your success. Our patronage program puts earnings back in your pocket. You not only borrow at competitive interest rates, you earn a cash dividend to strengthen your business and your bottom line. At AgWest Farm Credit, you're an owner, and ownership pays. Learn more about AgWest patronage and eligibility at agwestfc.com. Equal opportunity provider and employer, equal housing lender.
Well, on the heels of last week's report released by the Make America Healthy Again Commission, industry organizations are calling for science-based ag policy. In a statement, the Modern Ag Alliance said the report raises the possibility that the federal government could take a position to restrict farmers' access to crop protection tools, undermine existing science-based frameworks, and ultimately jeopardize the affordability and security of the U.S. food supply. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Russell Nimmitz.
AI and the future of electricity demand, well, not even just the future, the right now of electricity demand. But, yeah, last night I got to sit through an incredible presentation and an incredible panel discussion as well. And it triggered this tweet. I posted this on X last night. Electricity. Enviros started demanding electric everything. Remember, they want, you know, California. Yeah, you got to have an electric lawnmower, not just electric cars. And then they wanted to shut off the electricity whenever they didn't have enough, right? They wanted electric lawnmowers. You had to have electric everything. They wanted you to get rid of your gas stoves. Got to be electric. And I like cooking eggs on a gas stove. It's just there's something better about cooking eggs with a gas stove instead of an electric stove. Do you guys feel me on that one? But, yeah, when it comes to electricity, environmentalists started demanding electric everything. They created this monster, and now it is hungry, real hungry. And I tweeted that out as I was listening to Paige Lambermont. She is a research fellow and an energy policy expert with CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And, yeah, she's on the ground here in Montana along with Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute with the Montana-based think tank doing some great work. Kendall, Montana First, we'll start with you. Great event last night. Thanks for letting me take part.
Yeah, well, thanks for showing up, and thanks for having me in studio.
You gave a great legislative update, and I definitely want to touch on that as well. Everything from property taxes to housing costs and more. But big picture, I really felt that this CEI panel discussion that you had talking about energy, electricity, AI, data centers, that's a key part of addressing the whole property tax question, if you ask me.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the future we're talking about. I mean, this is what Montana's economy is going to be all about in 25 years. It's going to be demand for data. It's going to be these data-intensive businesses. We're going to need to talk about data centers and how to power them with hopefully with Montana-made energy.
Well, that's the thing is you can build these data centers anywhere right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was talking with one friend who was at the event last night, and he's like, yeah, they've got data centers in Austin, Texas, but why would you build a data center in Austin, Texas? Property costs too much. You've got too many people there. You can build these things anywhere. Why not build it closer to the power source? It could be the natural gas coming out of our oil well sites in eastern Montana. It could be the natural gas deposits themselves. It could be coal. It could be small-scale nuclear. Any of the above, right?
That's exactly right. We actually have the best climate for data centers, too. I mean, you have all these computers operating, and they put off a lot of heat. So you need a cool climate. So Texas doesn't really make the most sense. Montana's the perfect place to build data centers, and it has a lot of benefits for Montana's economy, not just in, you know, the tech space, but, I mean, data centers, you know, what goes into data centers is computer chips. And computer chips need rare earth minerals that we have here in Montana. So we can mine the minerals, we can produce and refine it all here. We also have semiconductor manufacturing going on in places like Kalispell. We have photonics that goes into that, based in Bozeman. All of our industries upstream of data centers can benefit by this growing demand. And then the energy production, they need massive amounts of energy to operate, to crunch all the numbers and the algorithms that go into data and computing. So we can power that with our reliable energy sources, oil and gas, coal. We have, you need
hydro.
It, we have it. Hydro, exactly.
You could have a small hydro on your own private land, and you could be crypto mining. You could have a hydro, little hydro operation that could be generating power right there for cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. As a crypto mine, and you could bring in a little extra money to the ranch by doing something like that. And then the hydropower also helps back up that pond, so you got more water for your cows later on in the year, too. I mean, it's just crazy when you think about what all could be done right now. Well, let's welcome now Paige Lambermont, a research fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. So cool to hear you and your colleagues speak last night. share the numbers again, because I don't know if I did I hear you right? I saw on your tweet here 19 gigawatts of new data center capacity is anticipated.
Yes.
That's what we're supposed to add. But meanwhile, we're losing a whole boatload of electricity over the next few years at the same time.
Yeah, it's a concurrent problem. So we're getting 19 gigawatts of new data center demand in the next 5 or so years. At the same time, by 2034, 79 gigawatts of thermal capacity, so nuclear, coal, natural gas, are scheduled to go offline. Now, those
What's that number again?
79 gigawatts.
79. I thought I heard that right. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of power. I mean, Plant Vogtle that went online in Georgia a few years ago, the huge new nuclear reactors, that's a 2-gigawatt facility. It took a decade to build.
So we're losing how many? 40 of those in the next
40 Plant Vogtles.
We're losing 40 Plant Vogtles in the next how many years?
By 9 years, by 2034.
Wow. And then on top of that, we need, you know, set aside losing all of that power, we need to add about 10 of those.
Yeah, we need to add new capacity and keep existing capacity online. I mean, the power plant rule that EPA promulgated recently, or a few years ago, that's going to go into effect, would cause almost all coal plants and the majority of natural gas plants to go offline by the mid-2030s. It's not going to happen, I don't think, because just physical reality on the grid prohibits it. But right now the plan is that all of the coal plants shut down, and that most of the gas, anything that can't co-fire with hydrogen or do carbon capture, both of which are not very proven technologies, would have to close. There's just no way that, given the demand on the grid right now, that's possible.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I remember when I was working on energy policy on Capitol Hill, about 25 years ago now, aging myself here, you know, we figured 1,000 megawatts was enough to power. What would 1,000 megawatts? So when you talk about 2 gigawatts, when you talk about the need for 19 additional gigawatts of electricity, and combine that with the fact that we're losing potentially 79 gigawatts if things keep moving forward the way they are, how do you break down a kilowatt, a megawatt, and a gigawatt for the everyday person?
A gigawatt is enough electricity for a few hundred thousand households. But industrial applications use way more. So maybe, you know, one big steel mill or 200,000 or 300,000 households, depending on energy demands, somewhere in there. So pretty big amount of electricity. But electricity is the way that we do meaningful and important work. And as new technology arrives that needs more meaningful and important work to be done, it's going to demand more electricity. And so I think seeing new demand as a problem to be solved rather than one of the side effects of innovation and of advancement is, it's the wrong idea to take, right? Like, this is a problem we need to solve to get the good, cool things to happen, but it shouldn't make us, like, decide to ban new data centers or prevent new things from happening. It's a problem we have to solve so that this thing that is happening can happen.
Yeah, because the fact is AI, artificial intelligence, whether you like it or not, it's like any technology. You know, there's going to be good that comes from it. It can be used for bad purposes as well. But the reality is, from a national security perspective, is we are in an AI arms race with the Russians. We are in an AI arms race with the Chinese. It ties into nuclear safety, nuclear security, nuclear technology.
We'll be back with the best of.
Get ready.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
It's useful to remember that economic systems generally, and market capitalism in particular, operate in a larger social universe. All aspects of capitalism, corporations, profits, and people getting rich, operate within what former BBR executive in residence Bill Witzit called the social license to operate. It's a powerful idea that businesses are wise to pay heed to. If the actions of profit-seeking businesses stray too far from what is socially acceptable, the implicit support that allows business the freedom to operate as they see fit may be challenged. Two developments bring this to mind. The first is the implementation by landlords of new tools to allow them to better match and usually raise residential rents to market conditions. Another is the increasing tendency of some drug makers to more fully exploit their market power to raise prices for necessities like insulin. The market gives them that freedom, but angry customers may not. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.